Welcome to Meltdown to Mastery, where we embark on a profound journey of personal transformation and empowerment. I'm your host, Jane Marquis, and today we have a very special guest, Denise Maselli. Denise is here to guide us through the intricate process of removing barriers to change and rewiring subconscious programs to realign our patterns with our true selves. In this episode, Denise will shed light on the pivotal importance of breaking free from the limitations that hold us back, allowing us to step into our fullest potential. She emphasizes the profound truth that we function at our best when we authentically align with our soul's purpose. Denise will delve into transformative strategies to shift away from perfectionism, people-pleasing, and the need to control, leading us toward a path of empowerment from within. Through her teaching, she will illuminate the path to healing and liberation, empowering us to tap into our infinite potential. So get ready to embark on a journey of self-discovery and empowerment. It's time to move beyond our limitations and step into a life of mastery. Welcome to Meltdown to Mastery. Welcome to Meltdown to Mastery, empowering women to overcome midlife crisis by rewiring the subconscious mind. Feeling overwhelmed, disillusioned, stuck? We all have. Here we explore inspiration and empowerment to navigate through the tough times and move to a place where hearts soar, minds manifest, and bodies heal. Welcome, Denise.
Thank you so much, Jane. I'm really happy to be here and have this chat with you today.
Right? The big chat on a really important topic about removing blocks to change and subconscious rewiring to realign patterns that allow us to flourish. So just start where you feel it would be important for, you know, our audience to understand why that's so important and how you became aware of this topic and it became your passion, right?
Yes, absolutely. So yeah, what I've always been a very spiritual person. I've always done yoga and meditation and all of that. And that has been really helpful on my journey. But what I started to realize, I think especially as our decades start stacking up on us, right? We start to realize there's just layers and layers of things that we've been through in life. And even though we make progress on things that we want and maybe changes that we want to see in our lives, we often find ourselves defaulting back to certain emotions, to certain memories in regards to maybe its relationship or, you know, work or something you thought you were, you know, supposed to do in your life. And so it makes it very difficult to change because we are having conscious awareness of what we want. We have a conscious awareness of, you know, maybe we don't have a conscious awareness of where these saboteurs are coming from, but we have this awareness that we keep trying to change and we default back. And so that's kind of where I was in my life. Again, even though I had a lot of tools that I was using, I think they helped me to cope, but to find that real change was difficult. And so I went through this journey myself, and I met another coach who was trained in subconscious healing. And I know there's a lot of different approaches to this, and there isn't just one way. But what was powerful for me as I practiced myself doing this healing, learning what it's based on, was that I was able to see just the weight of some of the things, how much weight they carried within my subconscious mind. And I'll use an example to make it a little clearer. So I had been in a career for about 20 years. I was good at it. I loved the work, yet there was something missing for me. And I couldn't figure out what it was, but at the same time, I became more and more anxious about going to work, about being there, and about how much it took from me in my life energetically. There were things I wanted to do that I would never get to because the job took so much out of me. And so, you know, I tried, you know, therapy, talk therapy, and nothing against that. But sometimes talking about it just reiterates the same energy. right? It's the same thing. Like if you wake up and you have an ache or pain in your body, focusing on it and talking about it, it kind of makes the whole thing worse. So it's like what we give our energy to. So what I realized, and I kind of say that's the beginning of another level of journey that I went through as I learned about the power that our subconscious has. So through this kind of living example that I lived, I had already been a leader, a teacher, a coach, a guide to helping people change. But this brought a whole new level when I learned that more than 90% of our actions, our behaviors, our thoughts, which again, thoughts become beliefs, right? If we keep thinking them over and over, even if we don't like them, they still become these limiting beliefs. So what I learned is that 90% of our behaviors come from those subconscious places in us. And I tell people, they're like, well, what actually is the subconscious mind? And how I like to explain it as kind of a metaphor, think of your subconscious mind as an iCloud of every experience in your life. And so you've got all of this stuff that is readily available to be pulled up and to be brought in front of you, often by what I would call our saboteurs. And, you know, they're just parts of us that learned that certain behaviors were the way to respond to situations. Maybe it was out of fear, out of feeling like I know what I learned about myself with that career was, I had always been taught, you have to work hard, you have to keep trying, you have to push yourself. And I think that that shadow of that was blocking me from what my heart and soul was telling me, which was, this is good that you're so good at this, but it's not feeding your soul. It's not aligned with the work you really want to do. And so by understanding that, a lot of those messages that would come in, whether it's the judge saboteur, the inner critic, however you want to phrase it, right? We have so much language now around these things, but those things can keep us from being able to really connect our choices, our decisions, and our actions in life. So that's kind of, in a nutshell, what I learned, how I experienced it myself, and how it really made a huge shift in my life. So I was able to, and I was ready to walk away from this career. Of course, I had some fear, but there was some part of me, because I got in touch with, you know, a lot of these things that you're telling yourself why you have to keep going are external, or they're old stories that you were taught, you know, that you maybe latched onto from your parents or society or whatever, that you have to work hard to feel worthy, that you have to push so hard and not worry about whether it feels good, right? And, you know, when we get into subconscious healing and even law of attraction, it's all about how you feel. And so that's where I shifted my coaching away from more concrete style, like goals and action steps and all of that, and was finding also that people were getting stuck in that method. They were like coming back, like they were like, you know, they had a plan from the week before and they'd come back to the session and they'd be like, see, I don't know what's wrong with me. I feel like I'm working against myself. And I'm like, okay, let me introduce you to your subconscious mind. So hopefully that gives a good kind of intro to how it came to be in my life, and then how I engaged with, you know, that understanding. And I think that's the biggest question that I get is just exactly what is a subconscious and how do we know like how much power it has over us?
Yeah, and it can be huge. Like you were saying, a lot of your qualities probably came from what your parents or a teacher taught you was success. And correct, we feel that without doing those things, we'll have no success. So, you know, you still have these thoughts or programs running in your mind, and you're not even aware they're not yours.
Exactly. And so part of the training that I got taught me a little bit about sort of the parts of ourselves, and that there are whole, you know, theories in psychology around, I believe it's internal family systems, where they say that all of us have parts of us that were most likely developed when we were children could be also developed though through traumatic experiences in later in life as well. Teen, you know, 20s, all of the formative years right up until 30, it's really a formative time. And so when we develop those parts to cope, you know, especially I find with women, and that's really the primary group that I work with, I don't, you know, close anyone out, but I just find that my energy resonates because I have lived it. And what I find is that we develop like people pleasing behaviors out of, you know, the generation of our parents were very, very different. And so we don't realize, we might not believe in those things. We don't realize that we end up doing those things. We end up living our lives based on the expectations of others and not being able to really find our authentic truth, you know, our inner soul desires. And so that is, to me, a transformational thing. So a lot of what I weave in, and I started meditating when I was a teen, just to try to find tools to, you know, to cope with things that were happening in my family and in my life. And so going back over time, and then, you know, I got certified in, you know, restorative yoga and yin yoga and breath work. And I try to help people see that even if you're not a yogi, you know, you're not a person who's doing all that kind of stuff, that taking time to tune in with yourself in whatever way is a way to make any change that you want to see in your life more possible, because it quiets your mind and you can begin to make space for seeing when you have an automatic thought and saying, oh, where did that come from? You know, trying to catch it before, you know, some people say like you have 16 seconds to turn it around. But if you wake up with like an ache or a pain, and I like to make that body-mind connection, because a lot of times when we go to sleep very full in our minds and a lot of overthinking, we don't get the restorative effective sleep that we really need, those circadian rhythm cycles. And so we wake up with a pain because guess what? It moved into a part of our body, all of this stuff that was trying to be resolved before bed. And then we wake up. Now, if we overly focus on that and talk about it and all of that, we could end up with a migraine, right? But if we simply say, oh, you know, maybe when I go to sleep tonight, I might just quiet my mind a little. And I tell people this, you know, I've had people say, oh, I tried meditation, it really doesn't work for me. And I say, what did you try? Well, I listened to, you know, so-and-so. And how long did you do it? Oh, like a day or two. And I'm like, it's a lifelong practice, right? As with anything, it's not easy, even for experienced meditators and you know, people who've studied this, there are going to be days where your mind is just blah, 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 blah. You know, it's just got a lot going on. And so I tell people it is a practice. And like anything, if you just give it your focused attention and be consistent with it, you will start to clear some of that clutter and you will begin to implement through. And again, there's a variety of different strategies that I teach. But one of the main things is helping people look at the stories they tell about themselves. What were the stories that were told about you in your formative years? And I'll use another example. I was always very into learning. I could devour books. I loved gardening. I loved all these different things. And it was very different from my family. And so I often heard this story. Oh, she doesn't even have to work very hard to be a good student. And I thought, but I'm over here working, you know, but we hear these stories. And then luckily, I heard different stories from my teachers who saw my ability to read, for example, act in plays, which I love to do, and read in different accents and all of these things. I don't know where that came from. It was just fun for me. But then I heard those teachers saying these things about me. And I'm like, are they talking about me? Me? I was like almost shocked. And so we as children, our brains are not sophisticated. We're trying to make sense of like, there's this story about me, there's this story about me. And you know, if things are strong enough and there's, you know, a feeling of not being seen or heard, which most of us experience, whether it's within our family, within a social group, you know, we don't get picked for, you know, the baseball team, whatever. we end up with a feeling of unworthiness. And that creates a part of us that stays protective well into adulthood. And this is the work where we can say, oh, you might remember through the work that I do, you might remember a specific event. You might see an old picture and it brings floods back all of the emotion. And it's like, oh, I didn't feel a part, or I didn't feel seen for how smart I was. I was kind of given, they were like stamping it with another label. And so we can break those myths, those stories down. We can even talk with our parts and say, you know, I love you. Thank you so much for being a protector for me for so long. But I am an adult now. And that's the other thing that I learned is our subconscious and our conscious mind, they don't have a communication system. So when we act, it's not like there's a little note that comes up and says, this is your subconscious, right? We have to learn which parts of us are active at what time and understand that that's sometimes why the conscious goals get put off, because there is so much more of the subconscious that's active. It's available. It has a lot of momentum for many of us, right? So that is kind of what, you know, the first part of what I do when I coach individuals, and I also coach small group coaching for women, and is that we work on understanding our minds, because many people hear this and they think, oh, hypnosis, or, you know, oh, the subconscious is the weak part of the mind, because many people will associate, you know, if the mind can be hypnotized and this is the part of the mind that gets hypnotized, it must be a weak part. And actually the opposite is true. What hypnosis highlights is that if we just speak clearly to these parts, they respond very quickly. So it's quite a, you know, a process in the first couple of sessions to learn about this and then to begin to open up, identify the parts of us that are very, very active, that are very strong, and that we want to just demagnetize. We want to take away the power of them. But I like to do it in a loving way, because, you know, people say, oh, I'm going to go to the therapy and I'm going to get rid of these emotions. It's not about getting rid of, it's about understanding and giving perspective to where they came from, and then regaining your empowerment to that you are not reactive to life, you are proactive.
Yeah. In my experience, one of the realizations is that often these reactions, the subconscious reactions or triggers, often make no sense, right? You can be in a perfectly good mood and then you get some kind of trigger, a memory from the unconscious, which can come from anything because we're programmed by our five senses. So it could even be a smell, and suddenly you're back, you know, to the way you were feeling when you were 6 years old.
Yes.
And it makes no sense. Your reaction makes no sense.
Yes. And, you know, often I talk about triggering, and I'm glad you mentioned it, because it is like something that really didn't exist, what, like 7 or 8 years ago. There was, you know, it was mostly used in clinical settings, but now we have trigger warnings on movies, TV shows, book, you know, all of it. And I believe that what is happening in our world changing so much that it has brought almost a fear of change, right? And so there's a large group of people that want to go back in time to hold on to what was the past. And there is a fear of the future. There is a fear of change and difference. And so what I ask people to do with triggering is let's turn it on its head. Because what most people do when they feel triggered, like you said, it comes out of nowhere and you go, ooh, I have this feeling in my gut. What's going on? Is I ask them to say, okay, let me look at this circumstance, this movie, this maybe a news thing that you just heard, and ask yourself, what is it in you? Rather than, you know, what is it in myself that is causing me to feel this way? And to really take a moment and dig deep. Now, maybe you can't at that moment, but take note of the emotion. Take note of where you feel it in your body. and go back and explore that, you know, on the next time that you're just going to clear your mind, meditate, listen to sound healing, you know, whatever method you like to use. Journaling is useful for a lot of people. And really turning it inward, because what do people, most people do when they're triggered? They blame that person that triggered them. They blame the, you know, the movie. They blame the producer. They blame the newscaster, whatever, the station. And that solves nothing. All it does is create more division, which, as you know, right now, we've never been more divided. And people are not taking that responsibility for why they feel that way. So in a way, you can look at triggering, and we can, if we want a personal growth sort of mindset, that if we look at triggering as an opportunity for our own inner work and realize, oh, wow, you know, when I heard my friend tell me this, maybe she made a decision that, you know, triggered something in us that made her, made us feel like, oh boy, she's going to stay trapped in this relationship. And, you know, she was getting interested in moving and making changes in her life. And she made this decision. Well, why did it trigger me though? You know, it triggered me. Why? Because I like to be a helper. I like, you know, I give her a lot of my time and energy. I try to help her get in touch with herself. And there she goes. She get, you know, so there, what kind of saboteur is that? And that's a good way to look at it, right? We have many kinds of saboteurs, but in a way, was I just my judge coming out, my inner critic coming out and saying, oh, look at what she's doing. Now she's, you know, my need to be in control of, you know, how she's making decisions, you know, all of these things come up. And, you know, again, it's not about bashing yourself, but it's just about realizing what parts of you become active when you get that trigger. And so you can kind of say, okay, you know, I thought I had worked on that boundary issue of like, it's her life. And I, all I can do is listen and be her friend, but her making a choice that's different, you know, I have to respect that. And I have to draw my own boundary there. So it was an opportunity for me to say, okay, you know, it might not make me happy, but if I'm looking always to other people and what they do to make me happy, then I'm not really in touch with what, you know, how I can really, I'm the only one that can control my emotions, right? So it goes into a much deeper place when we look at triggering in that way.
Yes. And I love how you're talking about self-responsibility, because we can go our whole lives trying to get someone else to fix us. But in the end, right, we have to do the work, and we have, it's part of being human, I think. And it's super important. And then you realize how powerful you are.
Exactly. You know, it is so true that people have, and I think this is also a generational thing. Like, for example, with my family, they were very traditional and believed that women should get married and have children. And I remember from a very young age feeling like, I want to go to college, I want to have a career, all of these things. And it was just like, again, a feeling of, you know, like it was somehow that doesn't fit in or jive with what was expected of me. And I thought I rejected it in my teens, but come around to mid-20s and there was that clock ticking and that I should, you know, my sister got married at this. It was all subconscious. I never sat down and said, well, I need to marry this guy, because I didn't do that. But at the same time, there were these parts that I didn't know were still so strong in me. Mm-hmm. And so I gave my responsibility for happiness to being married, to having a child, to all these other things. And then, you know, when I realized later on that I wasn't really taking responsibility, it was another thing that got me into really becoming, you know, what I originally say was a change agent. You know, I started out as a teacher and I wanted students to have experiential learning. I was very much into Montessori and, you know, kids learning by doing and all of that. And that's kind of how I raised my daughter. And that expanded into wanting to help, you know, teachers to actually see the students in front of them, not just be barking a lesson from a plan, but actually knowing their students. And it was like a revolutionary thing, because you know, that wasn't the way education was. Even me going into it in the 90s, it was still very much do this, get everybody to pass, and you're done, right? And so this idea of knowing your students and understanding what motivates them, because we're all going to have things we don't want to learn. And it was like, oh, that's a lot. You know, people who were very traditional teachers handing out worksheets and all of that were like, oh, that's a lot of work. And I'm like, yes, but these are human beings, right? And now, of course, here we are decades later, and education is really going through like a just an upheaval, because it's not working, right? Unless you see more freedoms and more choices given to students with structure, you know. So and that was the career that I actually really loved. But what I saw was that being part of a bureaucratic structure was the part that was really kind of pushing my soul down, you know. So I loved kind of getting the chance to leave that and then become a coach and work with people, and then take that in just the last few years and really take it to another level by expanding beyond just the conscious. It feels right with my soul, you know, to bring that other dimensionality to it. So,
yeah. Well, education, exciting. For a few decades has been kind of programming in itself, right? Not teaching kids to think, but just teaching them to memorize. And right. So I love what you're saying there. Also, to unpack, you know, we often do things to please others, like you said, get married and, you know, have the career and all of that. And then one day you wake up and you feel totally unhappy, like unfulfilled. I don't think we ever make wrong choices, but again, it's just to re-harness our inner strength and power to move forward from there, right? Like, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I think that what happens is over time, we start to realize, you know, it's not like you want to live with regret, but you think, okay, I've learned a lot since that time. Mm-hmm. And I am happy that I had a daughter. In fact, I decided to have a daughter, and I had a daughter inside of me in a month. So, I mean, there, you know, I try to look back at my life, because of course we're always looking back and saying like, I'm not happy with this, I want to change it. And instead of being positive about that, we tend to over-focus on negative things. But what I was doing in the process of learning this work is realizing how many things I've thought about in my life and dreamed about and visioned about, and they came to be. And so that even affirmed even more how much this really works. I mean, I thought about having a daughter and quickly had a daughter. I thought about having a business. I've had many businesses in my life, and I've had many different careers. Even in my 20s, I was a chef, and I was very happy at doing that until I got to a point where I started to feel unhealthy. And for me, that was a big, you know, that was a choice again, where I said, okay, I love the creativity. I love to make people happy with my food and, you know, really learn so much in the experience, but I was ready for something new. And you know what? That has stayed with me. And I love to cook. I cook completely differently, of course, now. And I still to this day find a joy in preparing food, even if it's just for little old me. But, you know, so we can learn that we have created a lot of things that we want, and that when we start to feel this inner sort of like, you know, self saying, is this really what you want to do? That's okay, because we are literally changing in every moment. Every cell of our body is regrowing, is, you know, the cells that need to go are dying. And if we keep re-energizing ourselves with positive energy and with inner work like this, like I tell people, if you don't have an inner work process, it's a good time to get one, because it's like you said, it's about self-responsibility. And, you know, sometimes we encounter people in coaching that they want to see us all the time because they're not taking responsibility. They feel that just being around us, they're going to absorb the healing. And they might learn a lot, but if they don't go out and try those things that they're learning in the sessions about themselves, about maybe their behaviors and so forth, then their progress is going to be limited. So it's really about, you know, looking at yourself, owning and understanding that, you know, there's never a perfect path. But if we can keep in touch with who we really are, or, you know, our empowered selves, we will continue to grow and change. And actually, you know, speaking of all the decades, and age much more gracefully, you know, because when we take care of how we feel, there is a focus on your body, right? When you're young, you could do all kinds of crazy races and, you know, you can eat kind of crappy and all of that stuff, and your body's much more forgiving. But as we get older, we start to really connect, if we have an inner work practice, with even how you feel after eating a certain food, you know? And I can remember, even like when I approached 40, that there were certain foods that I used to be able to eat that I couldn't eat anymore without feeling a bad feeling, you know, either in my stomach or whatever. And so you start to learn that, you know, alignment is more than just how you feel. It's how, you know, how your emotions feel. It's about how your body feels. It's about, now, are you making those choices that support that alignment? Right? Because if you're doing the mental work, but you're physically not taking care of yourself, there's something going on there. And I know that you mentioned that you were doing homeopathy and all of this, so you totally get it, right? You would probably see people who had layers of stuff, and it was manifesting in parts of their body. And so it kind of creates another layer that you have to unravel, you know, help them to unravel.
Yeah. Well, in my perspective, the body acts like a mirror to what blocks are happening in the mind. But yeah, it's fascinating. Could you give us a few tips on how to align with our soul so that we're living more in our soul's desire or outcome, rather than being so misguided by subconscious beliefs?
Yeah, I think that, you know, a lot of what I will ask women to do is to notice how they feel when they are around, like, the most important people in their life, whether it's having conversations or being asked to do something. It's a good opportunity, particularly with people that you know well, because you're in sort of a momentum with those people. And because I will say that probably 95% of the women that I see either have perfectionism going on, procrastination, or people pleasing, you know, the four P's. I ask them, like, how do you feel when you say yes and you mean no? How do you feel when you are really excited to get something done, but you procrastinate throughout your day, and then by the end of the day, you've done everything for everyone else? Is that really serving your inner true soul's purpose, your soul's desire, your heart's desire, however you look at it? I look at it as, you know, my soul is calling me to something more. And if I keep allowing, and it's not that we don't want to have partners and relationships, but I will say this, if we have been always doing these behaviors of, let's just use people pleasing as one example, just because we learn about it for a second and we go, oh, wow, you know, all I have to do is just state what I need. Well, that sounds easy, but we can't expect the important people in our lives to just suddenly know that. And sometimes we have to face that they might not be happy about it because we're suddenly empowering ourselves. So I say, use those connections, those relationships as an opportunity, and maybe take one where you know that person may have the same issue, because they're going to be able to relate as you learn it, right? If you're, let's say, in a marriage with a partner where you've been very much people-pleasing and you're like, I'm not happy. And this happens with so many women in this age group. I mean, I was looking at divorce statistics for, you know, 50s, 60s, and 70s, and they're highest they've ever been, because I feel that women are realizing they are not happy and that they do have other choices. So I say, use your relationships as a testing ground And I did this with family members as well. I pulled back from some family members that just had a lot of toxic energy. And we have to conserve our own energy. And so that is one of the ways we can begin to get some immediate relief by noticing, oh gosh, when I don't talk to her every single day, three times a day, or text with her, I don't feel as negative. I need to protect that energy. And how can I do that? And of course, it's a much bigger thing that you take self-responsibility, but that is a great opportunity to get some coaching on it. And the other thing is just when you feel triggered, and this is a big, I know we mentioned it earlier, but stop instead of blaming right away the person who triggered you and say, what is this coming from in me? Why do I feel this emotion about it? And do it with, you know, that compassion that, you know, okay, you know, it's perfectly normal for me to have a reaction like this, but let me explore where it's coming from. Mm-hmm. And then figure out how you can say, okay, this is reminding me of not getting picked for the team or whatever it is. And, you know, and then you can go back and look at that situation and understand that you don't have to be triggered that way anymore. So in a way, you got in touch with that younger part of you. And, you know, it can be as simple as that. And you may already know that you have that shadow self who is feeling always left out or whatever the thing that, you know, that triggered you. So we can begin to slow ourselves down and we can begin to look at the people around us and the energy that when we exchange with them, how it leaves us feeling. So it's that really slowing down. And I tell people, women, this for people pleasing. You know, you don't have to answer right away. If you feel any shadow of a doubt about wanting to do something or whether you can do something, you can simply buy yourself some time, especially while you're learning these skills, by saying, you know, let me check on that and I'll get back to you. Simple. Mm-hmm. Just give yourself the space and go to the bathroom, go take the dog for a walk, you know, and say, okay. Let's be honest here, you know, talking to yourself and saying, I don't really want to do this. And then you start to deal with, okay, there's a part of me that doesn't want to upset her, doesn't want to rock the boat. You know, all of those roots start to come out to why you are avoiding. Maybe you have developed an avoidance type of behavior by doing things that you don't want to do. But then guess what comes up? Your resentment. Because now you're like, I always do what she wants and she doesn't do, you know, all of that kind of stuff. So it's the slowing, using simple strategies of self-questioning and, you know, self-inquiry. Where does this come from? And so, you know, one of the things I'll share with you to put in the show notes is I write articles about this on Medium. I create guided video and audio meditations. And so I'll share a link that goes to all of that, because I know people today, being a teacher, people like to get information in their own way. So I like to put it out in a bunch of different formats. And there'll also be a link, of course, to my website, which talks more about the subconscious healing. That's really the container for all of the work that I do. But yeah, hopefully that can help some people to, you know, begin to look inward to their soul.
Yes. And that's brilliant, because sometimes we need to hear it a few different ways in order to really absorb it. I was just going to unpack one more thing and then sure. I'll have you share how people can find you. But as a society, we have this fix it. We want to fix other people. We want to make things better. People ask us, oh, how do I fix this, right? And we come up with our big ideas for them. But in the end, we're kind of robbing them of their own inner power and being able to figure it out on their own, right? And listen to their soul. So
absolutely.
So just unpack that.
Sure. Sure. This reminds me a lot of when I was becoming a teacher coach. And what I saw teachers doing a lot was just doing things for kids, giving them the answer, like not allowing what we used to call wait time, right? They probably still call it that, And so I had to like retrain their thought process, because they would like say an answer and then they would call on the kid who always had their hand up first. And I'm like, how are we promoting learning with all of our learners? We have slower learners, we have second language students, and we have to have a wait time. Well, I got them to use a stopwatch and to give wait time. And then eventually, and this, of course, that is a metaphor from the classroom, but it makes so much sense. Then eventually there was no hand raising allowed. Why? Because it shuts down the others, right? So when all the kids who are struggling with the language, for example, are in reading class, they know those five kids are going to have their hand up and they are off the hook. So they don't have to think now. So their learning is diminished. So we got to a place where the teacher had popsicle sticks with all the names. And she would take them from one to the other over and over all day. So there was no way you were going to get out of it. And so when, you know, I'd even have parents come to me and say, you know, my kid does this and this, and I don't know what to do. And I would, you know, see how they would behave with their kid. And I would have them come in and I would see, again, this people-pleasing behavior toward parenting, which just doesn't produce very strong individuals. It really takes that away from them. So what I try to promote is, when someone comes to you with a problem, instead of giving them a sentence, give them a question. And I use this as a parent because I only have one child. So you only get the one time. And of course, when I was younger, I was like, I'm going to be different than my mom and so forth. But then when you're actually there, you're like, oh, this is really hard. But I learned this as a teacher, that if we are giving them the answer to every little problem, we are not creating the future, right? Mm. So how can you take what they asked you, and you don't have to get fancy with it. You could just say, what are your choices here? You could simply turn it around back to them. And the more that you do that, the more they have to think. And you can say, you know, I know you'll make the right choice. Well, what do you think I should do? Well, I think you should consider like your top two options. What would those be? And suddenly you're just a mirror for them instead of the answer, right? And I think that's one of our saboteurs, that controller that only feels empowered when they're helping to control others' outcomes. And even as a teacher, we can't do that. The best we can do is know them. And, you know, by taking away all of those ways that we as adults collectively, men, women, all of us human beings have been trained that we are supposed to give as much support as we can. And not only does that drain us, but it's not effective. In this example, and you can take it to adult learners as well. You know, when we go to college classes, right? A lot of times they give us the answers. They show us everything. And then people don't feel they have to do engagement with the work and the process. And, you know, that develops non-critical thinkers. It develops people, like you said, who memorize, come back, try to remember it. And that's not learning. That stuff disappears within minutes after a test. And so it was that taken to the coaching level where, you know, as a coach, I can remember my first few times that I did individual coaching after leaving education. And I thought, I would try to give myself feedback after the session. I'm like, I just totally told her what her whole situation was, you know? And it's like, and initially I did nutrition and fitness. And so people would come to me and they would say, like, I literally would have people tell me, I really want you to help me with nutrition, but I don't want to stop eating anything that I'm eating. And I'd be like, well, I can work with you, but I really would feel bad taking your money. You know, like I would right away summarize the conversation. I would give them 15 minutes to tell me their issue, what they wanted to work on. And then I would tell them, you know, here's what I think's going on. And I realized that wasn't the best approach because, you know what, if they had that momentum going, they were going to resist me even more. And it's the same with kids. If you give them an answer, they're going to go, nope, I can't do it that way. Right away, you know, because they haven't figured it out. They haven't given themselves that think time. So I think that is a good, you know, sort of metaphor for how we as adults, whether it's with, you know, younger people or even just our partners and friends, how can we turn it back to them? Because I guarantee you, if you have one of those friends that calls you with all their problems, which most of us do, whether it's family or friends, if we keep turning it around to a question, they're either going to try to find the answer or they're going to find somebody who will get into that and give them answers that they're not going to follow anyway. Right. So, you know, it all balances out. And so it's just how much of your, you know, life force energy do you want to pour into people that are, you know, just not willing to take that self-responsibility and then in return don't give you much back. In fact, they take a lot of your energy. And I think that is one of the ways that we can drain ourselves, even with the people that we love the most. And so that's why I feel like this work is so critical right now, particularly for women. And as I said, I think that there's a lot of our societies across the globe, not just our country, that are trying to turn back the clock because they fear us having, especially as women, full empowerment. They fear what will happen. And actually what will happen will be the most amazing transformation in all of history. And I think that's what they're afraid of. You know, so I feel like, you know, we need to be there for our sisters who are like ready to make that change and need it broken down a bit. And so they can develop the best mindful practices for themselves and begin to really get in touch with who they really are.
Beautiful. I love it. And how do people find you? More of what you do and what you're writing?
Yeah. So you can search for my website. It is called Rock Your Blocks. Mm-hmm. And there are links on there to all my other projects, which, you know, like I said, I am on all the social media, but I have a YouTube channel. I have an Insight Timer profile and I write articles for Medium and all kinds of great stuff. So they can look for Rock Your Blocks, just like it sounds. And also my name, Denise Vaselli, and I should come up easily. And then I can also share with you like one link that takes you to all of that as well for the show notes. But this was really great. Thank you so much.
So good. Thank you, Denise. If you've enjoyed the information in this episode, share it with someone you care about and know will benefit. There is one thing for certain. Meltdowns are inevitable. Let's move into mastery together. In the show notes, you'll find my link tree, which has links to many of the most popular platforms. You'll also find links to connect to the featured guest, webpage, and social media. Thanks again for being committed to mastery. Change in this world really starts within each of us.